This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up later on our program, a live performance by the Brooklyn-based band Bishop Allen. But first, several new animated films, including Ratatouille, which you're hearing a bit of in the background, as well as The Simpsons and Shrek the Third, show why cartoon music is enjoying a major renaissance. For much of the 70s and 80s, the genre seemed to be characterized by stock music and a rehash of older styles. Well, today, the sounds of cartoons are mirroring the changes in the look of animation. We'll speak with three experts on the topic. Joining us first are Michael Giacchino. He's the composer of the music for Ratatouille, as well as The Incredibles, and Harry Gregson-Williams, who composed the music for all three Shrek films, as well as Flushed Away and Chicken Run. Michael, let me begin with you. Cartoon music historically was kind of seen as second-class music, you know, aimed at kids. But
yeah, I think so. In a way, you can look at it that way. I mean, but I look at guys like, you know, clearly like Carl Stalling and Scott Bradley, especially, who is one of my personal favorites. This was a guy who knew music backwards and forwards as good as any modern composer working today. I mean, he wasn't just rehashing old songs and doing that. This was a guy actually writing very modern orchestral music for these Tom and Jerry shorts, for the most part.
So and Carl Stalling has become like a hero of, you know, the downtown improvising set here in New York.
Absolutely. No, these guys knew what they were doing. There was no question. And they just happened to be working on cartoons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think they easily could have gone to many other musical, jobs as well. They could have done anything, really.
Harry, what about, do you think we're seeing a kind of a rehabilitation now of the image of the composer of music for animation?
Well, I don't know about the image. It's just, I mean, if you've got someone like Michael doing the music for your animated movie, you're going to get what you got. By the way, Michael, I really liked Ratatouille. I really did. In fact, I had to persuade my children to let me take them to it because they weren't sure. They weren't sure about it from the trailers and stuff, but they really liked it. But I thought what you did with that was it was really elegant and playful and sometimes wistful, but it was elegant. And I think you are going to get a different thing than the sort of classic of those guys that you mentioned whose their style and the way they did these things must have been so labor intensive and quite extraordinary. I can't imagine, but I think you're bound to get a slightly fresh approach if you hire people like Michael and myself, because you know we don't have the same sort of chops as those people.
Yeah,
well,
they
are going to give you something slightly different.
Is it also a case that, you know, as the animation has developed over the past couple of decades and, you know, the rise of computer animation and computer graphics, that as the animation looks more lifelike, that you need to change the way the score works as well?
Well, yes, I wouldn't necessarily say change it, but then, I mean, looking at Ratatouille, for instance, which is the last animation I saw, the facial expressions of this dear little rat and the emotions that he's pushed through, it requires the score to behave as it would if this were, you know, if this were an actor on screen, you know.
All right, well, and Michael, perhaps you can set up a little bit of the Ratatouille soundtrack for us in a moment. But Harry, let me stick with you for the moment, because your most recent animated film is Shrek the Third.
Right.
Now, a sequel can often be a creative trap for the writer, the director, the producer. What about for the composer? Are you expected?
Well, yeah, sure, it could be. I look at it very much like an old friend, an extremely warm and fuzzy friend. It's not often one comes to a project with in your back pocket a couple of themes that that have been tried and tested and hopefully can endure, that one can then explore and develop in the context of the film, and then obviously one's required to write some completely fresh new material, depending on what's happening in the sequel. But it can be, and you know the sort of recipe that makes up a Shrek is now my opinion is verging on. I mean, I don't know how many Shreks the guys are planning to do, but I will always remember the first seeing John Powell and my music playing on the first track and next door to a Joan Jett song and in between a that wonderful song Hallelujah.
Right.
You know, and I just remember thinking, this is really fantastic, and a lot of credit for that should go to Andrew Adamson, whose musical vision, you know, as a director. Now, I don't think anybody had sort of smashed pop songs, and not just any old pop song, but this really well-chosen songs, along with some emotional and emotive score.
All right, now that's
on an animation, especially with a green ogre and a donkey, and I think.
But that is something I want to follow up on with you in a moment, Harry. But let's hear some of your score for Shrek the Third, as Harry Gregson Williams was just telling us, bringing back occasionally during this score some themes from the earlier Shrek movies. Some music from the animated film Shrek the Third, written by Harry Gregson Williams, who's one of our guests on Soundcheck. We're also speaking with Michael Giacchino, whose most recent score is for the animated film Ratatouille. And Michael, now your score to Ratatouille has been getting some great reviews, not just from Harry a moment ago, but the Chicago Tribune called it the most delightful musical score of the year. Not most delightful animated film, but just most delightful musical score of the year. It seems like at times you are referencing, you know, France, of course, the setting of the film, Henry Mancini, perhaps. I mean, what did you see as your mission with this soundtrack?
I mean, for me, it's a mishmash. I feel like this movie, more than anything else I've ever done, was the biggest challenge. It was, and I don't mean this to sound cute or anything, but it really was like throwing together some odd, strange recipe where you're just grabbing things from all shelves, you know, anything in the kitchen you can find, you throw it in, and you just hope it works, because the film is an odd kind of film that we struggled to kind of figure out exactly what this thing was the whole way through. And even when it was done, it was like, well, I don't know what it is. I just hope that it works, you know, because you're constantly, you're just trying to make it work with the story. And it's a story that, which at first glance you look at, go, well, that shouldn't work. A rat who wants to cook in a kitchen, why should that be interesting? But Brad Bird, who wrote and directed it, is, in my opinion, just one of the greatest writers out there today, and he just knows storytelling, and that's the key. The whole thing is, that's the key, storytelling.
But also, Michael, I think it feels fresh, because not just the movie, but the score as well, because it doesn't, you know, sitting there as someone who's scored several animations now and kept my eye on other animations that I haven't scored over the last 10 years, say, it didn't put me in mind of anything I'd ever seen before. It was its own little guy, and that's what I loved about it, actually.
Yeah,
it had its own flavor.
I agree with you. I think Brad has a way of eking that out of everyone that works with him, you know, because when he goes into a project, no matter what it is, he's going to find a unique way to look at this thing.
Yeah. Well, and there's a sense of play as well. In fact, the end credit is listed as End Creditui.
Right.
And here's a little bit of that music from Michael Giacchino. and Creditouilles from the film Ratatouille, music by Michael Giacchino, who also composed the music for The Incredibles. We've also been speaking with Harry Gregson-Williams, who wrote the music for the three Shrek films, as well as Chicken Run and others. And joining us now is Daniel Goldmark. He's author of Tunes for Tunes, Music and the Hollywood Cartoon. He's assistant professor of music at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland. Joins us from the studios of our sister station, WCPN, there in Ohio. Daniel, you heard Michael before mentioning, it was Harry before mentioning hearing his music with all of these pop songs around it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is one of the, there's been a lot of pop song use in films, and now we're seeing it more in animation. What does that do to the role of the composer? How does that sort of change the role of the composer in the modern film?
I should really let Michael or Harry speak to this, but I know at the very least what it does is that often songs will be commissioned or thought up in advance, especially if they're going to place them somewhere in the film. They know there's going to be a song, and so it may be that the composer has to write the score at times around the song. There mm-hmm. may be points where we want themes from the song to come up, especially if it's a theme song. The Disney films is a great example. The films that Howard Ashman and Alan Menken did in the 90s, Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid, and those, a lot of the songs in those films come up in the background, and so they really have to work hard to put the two together. So for modern films, or more recent ones, the same thing is going to happen, except, especially with the Shrek films is an excellent example, where you've got Joan Jett or Smash Mouth or other modern bands having their songs inserted into the film. You've got two very different kinds of music butting their heads against each other.
Right.
You have original underscore, and then you have pop songs like you would in any other feature film.
Yeah, no, I'd very much agree with that, and I think that's why, one reason why, for instance, Michael in Ratatouille was able to have such a musical impact, because and carry the emotional weight of the thing, because if my memory serves me correctly, was there a song there? If there was,
there was only one. Yeah,
there was mostly your score, wasn't it? And it, you know, you were required to be the peak and the trough of the emotional arc musically, and it really is a different job if one's ducking in and out of songs, which can do those emotional things well enough if they're chosen well, but it does leave you as the score as being slightly sidelined in perhaps some of the more heavy emotional or fun moments in a film. And but I think that's why, for me, that the Ratatouille score, it's kind of had to do everything, so it did.
Michael, with the relative lack of pop songs in the film Ratatouille, do you feel like you maybe got a little more free rein to do things that?
I think so. You know, it's one of these things. We're so dependent on who it is we're working with. And in my case, I was working with someone who kind of that's the route they wanted to go, and it could happen. It could go either way at any time. But there was one song in Ratatouille which they asked me to write. And which I ended up basing on the main theme from the film, that little clip that you played in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was a terrifying experience because I had never done that before, written a song for that was supposed to work in a big film like this. But again, it was, Brad pushing me, no, just you can do it. We can do this thing, But I do agree with Harry. I think it's one of those things where for my experience on this film, I was able to kind of run the whole gamut of what the story arc is musically. I could go from every emotion from A to Z through the whole film. And I wonder, Harry, is that harder to do when you're dealing with a film that has a lot of songs in between?
It is. I'd say it is somewhat. And I think not just harder, but I think one has to take seriously the task in hand is different, and
right.
not to try and force some moments, force one's music on some moments a little heavier because of that. I think you really do have to take it all into consideration. I mean, a score that I did a few years back, so the movie didn't do nearly as well as any of the Shreks, but it was called Sinbad.
Mm-hmm.
That was one heavy old symphonic score there, because there wasn't a song at all there, and so I had to look after all the moments, like Michael interested in his recent film, and it does make a big difference. So that's
right.
A very different task.
So there really has been kind of an evolution, I guess, of what is expected of a film composer in recent years. Which brings us, Daniel, to the third of the major animated films that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and that is The Simpsons. Alf Clausen has done The Simpsons TV show music for lo these many years, but the producers decided to hire Hans Zimmer, who did, among other things, The Lion King and many, many other films, to do the score for the new Simpsons film. Why do you think they made that move?
Oh, I could guess many reasons. And again, I'm very curious to hear what both Michael and Harry would have to say about this. But my one guess I have is that I think there's this notion that music for television, especially for sitcom, as The Simpsons is, 22 minutes, music in and out of the commercials, music between scenes, musical numbers, is very different from a feature where, especially for an animated feature, you can have wall-to-wall music. Michael must have written a tremendous amount of music, for instance, for Ratatouille, where you've just got something happening all the time, and there always has to be music. And maybe they thought, we want to have someone who is used to doing features, and Hans Zimmer has not only done numerous, many, many, many features, he's done quite a number of animated features. Mm-hmm. And so I can say, personally, I think I would have rather heard what Alf would have done with it, but I can logically, if only logically, understand why they went in the other direction.
All right. Now, Daniel, you've studied for your book, Tunes for Tunes, the classic cartoon music composers that Michael and Harry were mentioning before, Scott Bradley, Carl Stalling. I suppose we should throw out the name Raymond Scott, although he didn't actually write for cartoons. His music was appropriated for them for much of the central part of the 20th century. How does that music stand up just as music, divorced from its context with animation?
I think that's why this music has worked so well for people, is that you really can't listen to recordings of Scott Bradley and Carl Stalling. And it's not just that you can see what's happening in the cartoon by listening to the music. That alone makes it excellent, really, really great music. But then you actually listen to what they're doing, the Schoenberg and Bartok that Scott Bradley is throwing out, or the 10 pop tunes in a row in a space of 50 seconds that Carl Stalling will string together years before anybody else is doing that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. you think, wow, they were doing this in the 30s?
Right.
This is really advanced stuff. And so for people, for cartoon composers now to go back and listen to Stalling and Bradley and a lot of the other composers, it's great because it really gives a connection to sort of the old school way of doing cartoon music and tying it to the modern way of doing cartoon music.
All right, well, we're going to actually take a quick break, and we'll have some of Carl Stalling's Catnip College to take us into the break. And when we continue, more from Harry Gregson-Williams, composer of the music for the Shrek films, Michael Giacchino, whose most recent score is to the film Ratatouille, and Daniel Goldmark, author of Tunes for Tunes, Music, and the Hollywood Cartoon. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're talking today about the state of cartoon music. We're speaking with Michael Giacchino, who composed the music for The Incredibles and most recently for Ratatouille, and Harry Gregson-Williams, who's the composer of the music for the three Shrek films, like Shrek 2, that you're hearing in the background. Daniel Goldmark is author of Tunes for Tunes, Music and the Hollywood Cartoon, and assistant professor of music at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland. Daniel, the term Mickey Mousing, can you explain what that term is?
It supposedly was coined, by David Selznick back in the early 30s, describing, supposedly, to the great composer Max Steiner, And what it refers to is when the music very specifically mimics what's happening on screen. Now, every cartoon you see from that period, especially the Mickey Mouse cartoons, does this. In fact, it's sort of a standard thing to do in short cartoons because the music doesn't just tell us what to think. It also gives you the sense of motion and feeling and really brings the cartoon to life. But in live-action features, it calls attention to the music, which is pretty much the one cardinal no-no that you're never supposed to do as a composer unless you're told to. And so Mickey Mousing in live-action terms is pejorative. It's not something you want your music labeled as doing.
Okay. Now, Harry and Michael, you guys are not doing short cartoons, but you're also not doing live-action. You're doing long-form animation. Michael, let me start with you. Is there a conscious attempt to not engage in Mickey Mousing?
Well, and one of the other things I believe that the term came about was also because the music was doing, for the most part, much of the sound effects as well.
Hmm.
You know, there was very little sound effects used on those early cartoons. You know, again, I'll reference the Tom and Jerry.
Michael, do you mean, like, for instance, if someone was running along, the music might be beep, boop, boop, boop,
exactly.
Boop, it would actually, yeah, I'd never really thought of it like that.
Exactly, and I think that the music was kind of having a dual purpose at that time, whereas now it's a very different thing where we're working in a world where sound effects are very prevalent and very much a part of our soundscape that we have to kind of consider and work with as well. But I think that as far as the films that Harry and I have been working on recently, and I think we're able to treat them more like a live-action film or like a story. You know, I'm almost hesitant to even call it animation because I feel like animated films have become a genre instead of just becoming films, you know, and I really believe that animated movies are as much a movie as any live-action film that you may see.
And
they
that's
just happen
always
to be animated, you know.
Daniel?
And isn't that always the problem? I mean, I think you just said it, that it's the difference between films that are animated versus animated films.
Right.
You know, you've got stories that happen to be animated, and then you've got films that where animation is really the key, that it just would not exist any other way, and the music really reflects that.
Yeah, absolutely. I must say, from my own experience, with I remember Jeffrey Katzenberg saying on Ants, you know, guys, what Ants? This is Romancing the Stone. You've got Sharon Stone, Woody Allen, Chicken Run. You know, it's a love story. It might have been, you know, chickens on screen for 90 minutes. But in fact, that's why I was a little surprised. A year and a half ago or so, I did a movie for Jeffrey again, for DreamWorks again, Flushed Away, which I liked a lot. It was very, very English, appealed to my sense of humor. But I set sail pretty much as I always had done on the DreamWorks animation, which was to not take too much notice of exactly what was going on screen, but just like in any other movie, live action movie, try and get to the heart of the thing and tell a story with the music. But I was stopped in my tracks, and it became necessary. It became my job, although slightly reluctantly, to go back to a previous way of doing things, where one could close your eyes and know what was going on.
So if we close our eyes, we can imagine from this music what life in the sewer must have been like. This is some of Harry Gregson-Williams' music from Flushed Away. Some of the music from the film Flushed Away by my guest Harry Gregson-Williams. We're also speaking with Michael Cicchino, who composed the music for Ratatouille, and with author Daniel Goldmark, whose book is called Tunes for Tunes, Music in the Hollywood Cartoon. Michael, you were talking before about, you know, there is no real need to engage in the term known as Mickey Mousing, where the music actually mimics and at times even applies sound effects to the action on the screen. You're getting, you know, the film with sound effects already put in. At what point are you, the composer, brought into the process?
Well, I'll get the film. You know, in animation, it's very different than live action because you're kind of working on it as it progresses, as it's finishing, and you get to watch this little flower blossom in front of you as you're going. So I'll get it with all kinds of rough, either storyboards and rough sound effects, so it's all there. But the thing that's great about it, if it's working, I mean, you can just, it's really about engaging in the storytelling, you know, and that's how you know. If you can watch one of these animated films in its rough state, with really roughly drawn storyboards and not even realize that they're storyboards, you're just engaged in the story, you know that it's working well.
When you say storyboard, that's not animated, literally.
No, it's just literally a piece of paper that someone scribbled a really rough drawing of a rat on, you know, and some of them are in different stages than others. It could be something that looks like it just got scribbled on a napkin, or it could be a beautifully drawn, you know, scene. But it really are just drawings that are somewhat animated, maybe very crudely, but it's really there to give you a guide, and you hear the voices, and that's how they, you know, kind of work out the flow of the film.
So in your case, the music and the film were it was sort of a dual birth. I mean, they were both growing up simultaneously, it seems.
It was, and it was one, you know, when I first saw the movie, I kind of went in thinking of it in more terms of, well, it's going to be a movie about rats, so there'll be a lot of da-da-da-da-da-da and a lot of moving around musically. But I remember when I came out of the film for the first time, even in its really rough state of being on storyboards, I felt like, wow, this is an incredibly emotional movie that has nothing to do with, you know, rats. At all. It has everything to do with what we kind of as people want out of life and want out of our lives. And that's what makes it, I think, you know, any of these films. That's why I say making it a genre is just not a fair thing.
Right, because we think of cartoons as comedies.
Exactly,
it's just light,
exactly.
Fluffy stuff, and there's obviously a broader emotional texture to a lot of these films. Let me ask a final question to the three of you. What's next? I mean, how is this field of music for this particular kind of movie, how is this field evolving? Is it technology that's driving it? Is it advances in animation? What do you think is next? Daniel, let me start with you.
Well, gee, I think that the technology is definitely affecting the way that people are creating music. You know, different kinds of ensembles are appearing. If you look at the score for Ratatouille, you've got, you know, really big orchestral, and then it pulls down to the sort of French bistro style.
Mm-hmm.
You look at a film like Team America, you know, you've got a film that's marionettes. So it's a very different kind of animation. And again, big scores and lots of songs. This is a film that Harry scored. And so you've got, with the films, they're exploring new technologies. But at the same time, the composers are being given a lot of opportunity to really explore and do different things. And I think it gives me a lot of hope that a lot of new things are happening.
All right. Harry, quickly, final response from you?
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And I think the sky's the limit. I think it would be rather like asking what's sort of next in, if we were talking about scoring for live action films. And I it would be difficult to answer that because it really depends what the project is. And I think Michael hit on it earlier. It's really about the story. If you've got something as sweet and touching and unique as Ratatouille, for instance, and certainly Shrek, especially from, in my opinion, the first one, mm-hmm. the second one, I don't think the sky's the limit for a composer. One can take it anywhere.
Michael, you started with video games and TV, and now you're on to the big screen. You know, what do you think is next?
You know, I agree with everything they say, and I would just like to add the thing that I hope doesn't change as we move forward is the use of live musicians, because to me, that's where the soul of what we do comes from. We could sit in our rooms and write these notes, but they're really dots on a page until these guys sit down and play it, and to watch them, to me, is always a marvel, and I love it. And that's what I love about the old music, the Scott Bradleys, the Carl Stalling, all of those things. It's all guys sitting in a room playing music, and that's what I hope never changes.
Well, we're hearing some of Michael Giacchino's music for Ratatouille in the background. Harry Gregson-Williams has done the music for the Shrek films. Daniel Goldmark is author of the book Tunes for Tunes, Music in the Hollywood Cartoon. They've been our guests on Soundcheck. Guys, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Still to come on our program today, the Brooklyn indie pop band Bishop Allen. They recorded 4 dozen songs last year alone. This year, the members of the band are staying busy with a new full-length album, a tour, and even a movie cameo. Bishop Allen performs live in our studio in a moment. This is Soundcheck.